My guest today is Tim Benrick. Tim, how you doing?
Pretty good, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing great. I can't believe that we've worked together for almost a year, and this is the first time you've been on my show. What's up with that?
You know, I don't know. I think this is the first time you asked me. We're in the same place. We're traveling all over the place.
We're both moving around too much.
December 2nd, that's my anniversary date, December 2nd.
Congratulations. It'll probably come out about that time.
Yeah, cool.
And let's talk about Azure websites, because I just caught your session at a user group just a few minutes ago. We're talking about advanced features of Azure websites. I'm a big proponent of Azure websites, mostly because they're not expensive and they're simple. But you didn't talk about the simple stuff. You talked about some of the more advanced stuff.
Yeah. I talked about staging slots and web jobs and how you can use asynchronous programming to leverage Azure websites to do more responsive things so your users have a great end experience.
Okay. Staging. What's it? Staging slots.
Staging slots. Deployment slots, I think they call them. So I think in the new portal, they're called deployment slots. And so if you go...
It evolved out of the staging and production slots that the web roles had.
Yes, exactly. And so it used to be in the portal, you could create a new slot, but it always had to be called stage. And so people would often, if they found you were on Azure, they would always do dash stage and see kind of if you had something staged. But now you can name it anything you want. So you could name it a GUID, or you could put, you know, I often show beta or dev and stage, things like that to showcase the different slots.
Hmm. And we've got more than two now.
Yeah, so a standard instance of the websites is the only version, the only pricing tier that has staging slots, and you can have up to five on that standard instance.
Okay, I think there's three levels, right? Free, basic,
there's free, standard. Shared, basic, and standard.
Oh, it's four, okay. Yep. But only the expensive one, the most expensive one has.
Yes, correct.
All right, and what's the purpose of these slots?
So the slots would be if you know, I used to work for a large newspaper company in Chicago, and so we would have these wild deployments where we would, as devs, we would, you know, work on our project and say, okay, we need to deploy this. So we would have to handwrite this huge document on how to deploy it. And so we would test it, and we would deploy it to QA based off of this document, and we'd pass that off to operations, and they would deploy it to staging, and they would follow the document step by step, and they would say, hey, you know what, this didn't work, and they would modify the document, and they would deploy it to staging, and then, you know, users would do some usability testing, say, yep, this looks good, blah, blah, blah. And then they would redo all of that into production at like 1 or 2 in the morning. And so you've got these operation folks who have been working all day. Now they're up at night doing this. And if you want to get usability testing, you've got to call, you know, your person from the business to come in at 3 in the morning and do this usability testing. And so staging slots simplify that a lot. You can deploy your code. You can create a staging slot or a deployment slot and then deploy your code to that during business hours. And hopefully you're using some sort of continuous deployment, you know, whether you're using Git or some sort of automated deployment strategy. Mm-hmm. But even if you're not, you deploy it into the staging slot, you have people usability test it, understand how it works, and then at 1 or 2 in the morning, you just hit swap. And when you hit swap, it says, what's your source? So you would say, my source is stage, and I want to overwrite production. And when you hit swap, Azure will reconfigure the load balancer so that what was in staging now becomes production. And so when the user refreshes on your site, they're now seeing the new production code. And so that's really cool because you can stage it during the day, swap it at any point, and then if for some reason there's an error or there's some issues, you can just swap it back, and now you've got your old code that you're easily able to kind of retreat and go back to.
Yeah, I think the key is this is a configuration change. You're not actually moving the files around.
Correct.
So it happens almost instantly. You're just pointing an IP address or a DNS at some other IP address.
Yeah, Azure does it all internally. So the Azure load balancer is what does it. And what's really cool is if you have SSL certs or anything like that, they're not impacted. The DNS A record is the same. And
yeah, DNS was the wrong word. Yeah. You're pointing at an IP address similar to what a DNS does.
Correct. Azure knows where to route things, and they just route it for you. So everything from a DNS standpoint you have set up is still good.
Right.
Yeah.
Very cool. Is there other use cases for these slots now that we have more than two of them?
So one of the things that I was actually looking at is, you know, could you do A/B testing with it? So for instance, maybe you've got, you deploy a version of your site where it's, you've got a red cancel button to slot A, and you've got a green cancel button to slot B, right? And then you on your, through your load balancer, route different users to each one. And so when the user's on site A, they click, you see how many you're doing telemetry, and how many times are they clicking the red cancel button versus the green cancel button. So maybe you could do some A/B testing and get some telemetry data because you have these different deployment slots. So I think there are other use cases, but I don't know other than staging and kind of progressing through your development cycle and maybe A/B testing. But those are the two that come top to mind to me. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on any other ones?
No, I think that's a good idea. That you hit on the one where you could have not just staging, but your QA server could also be just another slot.
Yeah.
Your dev smoke testing could be just another slot. And you could progress through that. Once you've got enough dev testing, you push it to QA. QA pounds on it. You push it to staging. The end users start pounding on it. Then you push it to production.
Yeah.
Those could be good as well. And then your A/B testing could be something not just what are they clicking on, but are you actually driving market share? You have an entire redesign of a site.
Right, yeah.
You know, what happens if I use a kind of a metro-ish interface versus a more of a top-down, drop-down menus type of interface?
Yeah,
do absolutely. I sell more widgets that way? But it's up to your imagination, I think.
Yeah.
What are some other things? You mentioned web jobs. What's that?
So a lot of times people will say, hey, I really like the features of websites, but you know, I don't think it's going to meet my needs because I've got some background processing I need to run, or I've got some batch file that I need to run on a certain basis. So I need to have a VM so I can have a Windows service doing that, monitoring a queue or doing these advanced features that I don't want to happen on my web process. And so web jobs give you the ability to have that background or worker role process within websites. You don't need to spin up a virtual machine or even a PaaS web PaaS worker role. You can do it through web jobs. And so we recently announced that the new web jobs SDK is in version 1.0, and so you can install that through NuGet onto any console application and very easily have processes, subroutines that are bound based off of queue triggers or blob triggers or even Azure table storage. So anytime a new record or a new blob gets added, your code gets executed. So a great example of this is, you know, take Amazon's ordering, for example. So you go to Amazon, you say, I want to buy the new Microsoft Band or whatever it is. You hit purchase, and instantly you're presented with a confirmation number. But other sites, they've got to have that little spinning wheel where it says, you know, I'm checking your credit card. Don't hit order again because I'll double charge your credit card, right?
Or they're checking to make sure it's in stock.
Yeah, exactly.
Or just any number of back-end systems that they could call synchronously.
Right. So Amazon is really smart, and they do that asynchronously. So they hit submit, they generate an order number, and then submit that to a queue of some sort. And then they've got a worker process that picks that message up from the queue, runs your credit card, checks the inventory, and then, you know, I would say probably 98% of the time your credit card's going to go through. They've got it in stock because they've got good systems on the front end to monitor that. Mm-hmm. And then it goes through. And then on the off chances, they shoot you an email or a text message, whatever the case may be, and say, hey, this is out of stock and we need to do that, you know.
Right.
Or take maybe you're Southwest Airlines or you're a flight tracking and you say, you enter in, I want to monitor this flight, and you hit enter. And that goes into some database or some queue, and now you've got a process monitoring that flight that maybe you do it on a schedule or every so often you're checking the flight status, and then you send them emails. You can all now do that within a web job, and you don't have to have separate servers spun up to do that asynchronous processing. So web jobs are really cool.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you kind of hinted at this before. We had web roles.
Yep.
And now we have websites, which originally were just really, really scaled down web roles. But features have been added to that.
Yep.
And now we had worker roles, and now we have these web jobs, which are a lot like worker roles.
Yep.
What's the difference now? Are web roles and worker roles, are they going away and being replaced by websites and web jobs?
So I don't think they're going away or being replaced, but I think you could say that they are a great replacement to start with, right? So you could start out with a website. And, you know, with a website, you get access to multiple languages, Node.js, Python, Java, all these things.
Right.
But what you don't get access is to the root VM. You can't remote into that VM. If you've got, you know, some tooling that needs to be installed on a server level that maybe does some background processing to understand your call stacks and all these things, you can't install that on a website. But you could on a web role. On a web role, you still get access to the VM. You still get access to configure that VM. Hmm. And so there's still a need for that, I think. But websites actually are built on top of web roles, believe it or not. And so you actually get the flexibility to start simple. And then I always say start with a website, and if you get to a point where you can't do it, then look at a web role. And so similarly with a worker role, a web job is a great place to start because it basically takes any console app or, you know, Python script or even PowerShell that can run as, you know, an executable, and it will just keep running in a loop. Similarly to a worker role, it's just an infinite loop, right? You know?
Right.
And so what's really cool with the web jobs is the SDK gives you really cool features to just have binding methods. So I can write a few lines of code to bind to a storage queue in Azure and check the messages and do action, whereas in a worker role, I would actually have to write that code to monitor that storage queue. So the web job, in so many cases, has got some cool features where it actually limits the amount of code you have to write.
I see.
But again, you don't get access to the box, so you can't, if you had some framework that you might need for your worker role, you can't do that with a web role. Scaling is not independent, so with a web role and a worker role, you can scale your worker roles out independently on different criteria. Whereas when you deploy a web job, you're deploying it into your website container. So when you scale, you create a second instance of your web job, or a second instance of your server, whether you need it or not.
Sure.
So there's some workarounds around that. Is like you could deploy a new website that just has your web roles on it and then scale that independently. But you know, there's still a place for worker roles and web roles. It's just this is an abstraction that you can start simple. You know, that's the kind of the website's model. Start simple and then expand from where you need to.
Yeah, that's, again, I started with that. That's the big appeal of websites to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically the file new Hello World app. It supports that really, really well.
Yeah.
And you can add this extra complexity on top of it. You didn't mention building a console app using the SDK, but web jobs also support other languages too, right?
Yep. You can do a Node.js, Python, basically anything that can be put into an executable. Can be put up there in PowerShell, batch files, all those things that you know you can run basically through a command line. They can be added as a web job, so it doesn't have to be C#.
Very cool, Tim. Thanks a lot,
Dave. It's great. So I hope you enjoyed this episode talking about Azure websites. This is, you know, what I love. I have the passion for technology, and when I've got great friends like David Giard and all of you watchers here, it really means a lot to me. So if you're not my friend on Twitter, please follow me, @TimBenrick, and let me know you love this episode. Thanks.